If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Good morning, Steve Dales, Pet World on WGN. This is the best job that I have ever because I talk to the best people ever. And I've got one of them right here. Her name is Mikkel Becker. She's a certified dog trainer. She is the co-founder of Fear Free, most important initiative that I've ever seen happen in my too many decades around veterinary medicine. She's also a certified animal behavior consultant. And we're here to talk about some interesting topics, Mikkel, including dog training methods. And you just happened to mention in a text, or maybe your husband Ryan mentioned it, after I have been talking on the radio about dog training methods and about use of shock collars. And then something interesting was brought up, and I'll let you talk about that. It's something that I hadn't even thought about. Can you explain what that is?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, Steve, for this opportunity. And you're such a good friend to us. And also just, you know, equally passionate about using the right kinds of methods with dogs. And what's really the parallel for me was it started from when I was young and hearing these stories about my grandpa Bob, who unfortunately committed suicide when I was younger. And it was really traumatic for all of us. But leading up to that, my grandpa had been in and out of mental institutions and had been institutionalized a couple of times. And during that time, he was being treated for bipolar disorder. And at the time, they didn't have what we have now. And part of the treatment is very just, I mean, it was pretty barbaric in a lot of ways. And part of it was the electroshock therapy. And so this would happen while he was still conscious, and it would be like very, very high voltage. My dad would actually see him come back to the house, and he would act almost dazed. Like my dad said, he was like, the only thing he could liken it to is almost like he'd been in some kind of like Nazi experiment. When he was coming back, he just was dazed, totally out of it, and actually had burn marks on his head from where these patches had been to shock him. And he'd lose all of his short-term memory and just would feel, and just the pain of that experience and feeling totally out of control. So it's like he wanted to submit, I want to get better, but oh my gosh. So even giving that permission, it's like, oh no, I actually don't. Once it's happening, it's awful. And so my grandpa went through that, and just knowing that experience firsthand and what he went through, it's hard to not liken that to what animals experience with shock collars. And you know, that same feeling of feeling out of control, and they had no choice to even be a part of it at all. And it's so scary for them, and they don't know what's happening or why. And a lot of times they're pairing all kinds of things with that situation that we don't even want them to pair with it. So when you look at some of the research that's been done with dogs that shock collars have been used on, a lot of times they're showing stress behaviors even out of the training context, and they're associating it with people. So there are just all kinds of really awful things that go along with that, whether you're a person or a pet. And I mean, it's so barbaric that now they only do it when a person is anesthetized and they aren't conscious. And, you know, it's awful to think of my grandpa going through that and, you know, trying to get better. And I think sometimes people think like, in order for my daughter to get better, I have to do this. This is like a thing I have to do to help them be better and to be better for our family. But really, it's not only are there other ways, but a lot of times it actually makes the situation worse than it does to take steps to improve it.
Now, I don't want to completely make the comparison because, you know, the shock collars are sometimes arguably at a lower level than actually showing a burn mark on the pet. It may not be a perfect analogy, but there is, I think, anyway, Mikkel, an analogy that can be made in many different ways. So back then, for people, there were no psychopharmaceuticals, which are available. Psychotherapy wasn't what it is today. Now, I know very little about treating humans. In fact, pretty much I know nothing about treating, but I know a bit about dogs. But to me, there was or is some comparison that can be made. And you said something else that I want. First of all, I'll stop there, let you comment on that, and then I have a follow-up.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think that there really are so many comparisons there, and there's so many better ways. Like now, so at the time, they had lithium available. So, and lithium worked okay for my grandpa at first. There was progress, but then it quit working. And so when it quit working, it's like, what do we do? And the only thing they really had at that time was the shock therapy. And so it's like, yeah, my grandpa wanted to get better. He didn't want to, you know, hurt people and make them feel sad when he was really depressed, and he'd say mean things, and you think, oh, why did I do that? And you get even more depressed when you would do stuff that was out of line. And, you know, and then, so he's like, okay, well, I'll have to do what I have to do. And so it's like going to that next step. But now there are so many different treatments available, and I wish that my grandpa was able to have what we have now with different medications, like you said, psychotherapy. There's so many different things that we can do for pets, for people. And, you know, I know that they're different, but also they're so similar. Like we have the same brain structures. We, you know, learn the same way. It's so similar between people and pets. And so I don't think it's a hard comparison to make. I actually think it's a natural one to make. And a lot of times, actually, dogs have been the models that we've used to actually understand a lot of human psychological issues as well.
So as a professional trainer and a leader among trainers nationally, there's no doubt about that. Is there ever a time that you would recommend using a shock collar? And I also want to throw in there the cartoon-like collars that you see the cartoon dogs wear called the prong collar, or one of those chain-link metal choke collars. Is there ever a time where you would say, yes, that's a good idea?
No, absolutely not. No, never. There's no place in training for shock collars or any type of corrective collar. And really, a lot of times what we're doing is more harm than good. A lot of times we are inhibiting the underlying emotion and we're inhibiting that behavior, but we aren't actually fixing it. A lot of times we're actually making it worse. And so long term, it actually worsens the behavior and other issues can arise as well. So a lot of times increased fear, increased anxiety, an increase in aggression. So it doesn't make things better. It makes them worse.
But they say as a last resort. So I want to ask you about that when I come back. And I have an idea. I know what to do as a last resort. I'll see if you agree. I also want to talk with you about a increasing problem, realistically, and that's the affordability of veterinary medicine, the affordability of even having a pet. And you're doing something about that. And we'll talk about all of that when we come back with Mikkel Becker, co-founder of Fear Free on WGN. Mikkel Becker is a certified dog trainer, a certified animal behavior consultant, a co-founder of Fear Free, and another idea that you have to help all of us. You know, so many of us have been talking about the affordability concern of pet care, and you're doing something about that, and we'll get to that. But now we're talking about dog training methods. And here's the thing that has been said, Mikkel, for years. All right, maybe you don't use a shock collar for puppy classes. Maybe not for your typical routine dog training classes. Okay, although there are trainers that do that increasingly. However, many say, oh, no, don't do that. But when the dog, when it comes to push or shove, the dog could be euthanized. The dog may be given to a shelter, or maybe that's already happened because the dog has bitten. Now, to save the dog's life, you use a shock collar. My answer to that, and we'll see what you have to say, my answer to that, and I feel very, very, very strongly about this, no, you've got one more tool you can use that is far better, a veterinary behaviorist. And there are many out there. They can tell if there is a medical issue potentially creating the problem because they are veterinarians, after all. They can use those psychopharmaceutical options, of which now there are many different, and figure out what might work best, use behavior modification, recommend a trainer such as yourself or a certified animal behavior consultant to do kind of the hands-on, quote-unquote, work as well. That is the way to go. I'm curious as to what you think.
I was going to say the same thing. I was like, I feel like I'm going to say veterinary behaviorist. So you spot on, Steve.
And what people should know is we did not rehearse any of this. So we did not. So
no.
And I never do with my guests. But why do you say not a shock collar and a veterinary behaviorist? Yes.
Yeah, so with a veterinary behaviorist, they are so skilled in knowing the different types of behavior medications that are available. And sometimes someone may have gone to their veterinarian and maybe tried a certain medication to help calm their pet, but they think, oh, I tried that, it didn't work, or it made my dog or my cat act weird, I didn't like it, so, you know, it just didn't help. Well, the thing is that there are so many available, and a lot of them are actually very similar with humans and with pets, which is really cool. I feel like I know so much when I go into the veterinary office now, and when I go to the human doctor, I'm like, gosh, it's so similar between the two. But it's really cool because a veterinary behaviorist is so highly skilled at knowing these medications and also knowing the dosages. So a lot of times, they may have different dosing, and just a different type of dosing for that pet can really help. And also situational medications. So sometimes it takes a little while for those to kick in, and they can have other medications on board that help your pet feel more calm and relaxed during that period. And the reason why that's so important is if the pet is in a really high state of stress, the good type of learning that we want to have go on, the type of learning where they're learning new behaviors and new, better ways to feel in that situation, because underlying aggression, for instance, that we were talking about, like with the dog that bites, almost always it's going to be something like fear. And so it really helps to treat it at its root cause and also helps them to be better able to respond to that behavioral modification that we are imparting. So when we're training them, they're in a better mental state to learn and to have that long-term memory of what we are teaching them. So it just helps put them in a better learning state, and it just changes the entire emotion of how they feel. And even if you don't have a veterinary behaviorist in your area, a lot of them will do remote consults with your veterinarian. Or I would also recommend a veterinarian that really specializes in behavior and that advocates for reward-based training. Like, there are so many options now. There's really no excuse to ever have to resort to shock. And when we say resort to shock, like, it ultimately it doesn't get better. It gets worse when we go there. It's just, and sometimes it feels good for the human person, because it's like, for the human, it's like, oh, I shocked the dog, they stop, and we get that relief of that frustration or that anxiety that we feel. But ultimately, we are worsening that behavior, and we are damaging our relationship with that pet. So there's never any reason or excuse to use it, period.
Well, of course, I agree. The thing is that you're a queen in social media yourself. I think that's part of the problem, though, is social media. People see on TikTok or on Instagram, or maybe even a friend at the dog park tells them, oh, so-and-so had this dog, or on TikTok you see the trainer, look, this dog would eat me alive, but now it won't because I trained the dog using this piece of equipment. And they're sold by it because they are so desperate, I think, Mikkel.
Oh, you're so right. It's really sad. And if you don't know what you're looking at, and you just look at the dog, and they think, oh, it went from barking and lunging at the end of the leash to all of a sudden it's sitting or standing quietly next to the person, they think, oh, it's better. But really, you look at that dog's face and you see the extreme stress that they're in. They're in that state of learned helplessness. And it may seem better in that moment, but what they don't see is the long-term impact on that pet. And a lot of times, it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And they also know when they're wearing that collar and when they're not wearing that collar. And that makes a big difference, too.
That's a good point. And, you know, that I feel the same way, and I'm curious how you feel about this, about invisible type, the electronic fencing. I don't want to mention a brand name, but the electronic fencing of any brand name, you know, that's concerning to me, too, because they're getting a shock. What's more, there are the practical issues. And I know one practical issue is some communities don't allow fencing. So I understand that. But having said that, if you have one of those things up, maybe for 5 years, your dog doesn't run out, but there's that one squirrel that one time. Or, and then mm-hmm. the dog gets hit by a car, or dog is lost. Or another dog who could be an aggressive dog gets in because it's easier to get in because those dogs don't know that there's any fencing up at all because they don't see anything. How do you feel mm-hmm. about that?
Oh, I feel the exact same way. You said that perfectly, and it's so true. They are definitely not fail-safe, and in fact, I actually met one of the people that was one of the lead trainers of one of the groups, and even she herself had the fence fail multiple times with her own pets. Stuff happens. The batteries run low. The dog sees something that they really, really want to get to. And they're going to go. I see that all the time in my neighborhood here. And it's really tragic. And sometimes it doesn't matter how high the voltage is for that dog. Like when they're in that really high state of arousal, they'll just run through it. It's like a person when they are just really jacked and amped up and they just don't feel pain. The dog can be the same way. If they see something that's that exciting, they're going to go through it. And so when I am walking my dogs in the neighborhood, I know which places have those invisible fences, and I'm avoiding those at all costs because it's not fair to the dog who's in that fence. And also, it's scary for me with my own pets because I've seen it far too often where a dog will just break right through.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to do a complete 360, 180, 440, I don't know. But we're going to change the topic. I don't know what it is. But we're going to change that, I know, when we come back, and we will with Mikkel Becker on WGN. All right, be honest now. How many of you share your bed with your pet or pets? Come on, I want to see a show of hands. Statistically, many of you do, even if you don't admit it. One survey reports that 55% of cat owners say their cats share their bed, at least occasionally. Of course, cats ultimately sleep wherever they want. About 46% of dog owners say the same, that they share their bed with their dog or dogs. Now, there are benefits. Here are some of them. Dogs are especially attuned to human emotions and body language. Research indicates they can detect subtle psychological changes in our stress or distress even as we sleep. And naturally, if we get distressed, they'll poke us and wake us up. Purring. Yeah, that rhythmic purring from cats, along with their warmth and quiet companionship, can be soothing for people. That's one reason many people describe a cat curling up beside them as surprisingly calming. And the frequency of purring might even support a sense of calm, but also physiological healing. Our pets boost mental and emotional health. Spending time with dogs and cats, of course, has been shown to increase levels of oxytocin. That's sometimes called the love hormone. Oxytocin promotes feelings of relaxation, trust, and connection. But automatically, if your dog or cat is right there with you, well, that's 6 to 8 hours right there of automatic infusion of these positive hormones, other hormones as well, aside from oxytocin. There are immune benefits, potentially. Living with pets exposes people to a wider array of microorganisms found in the environment and on animal skin and fur. Some scientists believe that this exposure can help diversify the human microbiome. In other words, it can help or support our immune systems. And another thing, especially for women who live on their own, provides a sense of security. Not cats so much, but dogs do. Here's an alarm system that works really well, right? And people feel more comfortable as well going to sleep with that dog right there. In addition to that, we've been doing all of this with dogs for a very long time. We talk about how dogs have come from outside to inside. Well, that actually happened millions and millions of years ago. Cro-Magnon, yeah, those humanoids slept with, they weren't dogs yet, they were kind of wolf dogs. And we shared right there, we slept together all those years ago. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN with certified dog trainer Mikkel Becker, certified animal behavior consultant, and co-founder of Fear Free. I think initiative is okay, has changed the way veterinary medicine treats our animals. It, to some extent, I think, Mikkel, has changed the way we think about visiting the veterinarian, that it doesn't have to be a bad experience. Can you talk about what Fear Free is all about?
Yes. So Fear Free is amazing. It's been just a revolution in veterinary medicine. So taking the vet visit and taking it from scary to something that we're like, oh, shoot, we got to go to the vet, to like, oh, actually, we get to go to the vet, and the pet actually being excited about it. Because with Fear Free, it's teaching veterinary professionals and certified practices how to treat pets in a way that helps them to feel calm and comfortable throughout that visit. So it's adding in non-slip surfaces, using calming pheromones, using colors that evoke a feeling of calm and relaxation, and using lots of treats and toys and good things. And so you can liken it to dentistry. So going to the dentist, a lot of times for a lot of us, can be really scary. But what they've done is helped to make it a better experience by adding in, you know, comfortable blankets, having a great show that the kid can watch, having music for an adult that maybe they can listen to. And my friend Debbie Martin, your friend as well,
yeah,
like at her, she gets to have a foot massage while she's having her teeth worked on.
What?
Which is incredible. Yeah,
what?
So that's like fear-free dentistry, right? So that's the same thing with making it a fear-free experience of going to the vet, is making it a place where the pet feels comfortable and relaxed, and a lot of times they actually want to be there. So instead of the pet pulling to get out, a lot of times they are dragging their feet, not wanting to leave, because we can leave them with that bit of an experience of going on that visit.
And we've had several conversations for sure over the years about fear-free on this very radio show. However, we've got to get them to the vet in the first place. And the biggest obstacle historically has been the pet not wanting to go, and therefore us feeling we don't want to go because we don't want our pets to feel they're unhappy. But now there's a bigger obstacle overall throughout the country, I think, than ever before. And that is just the reality of the cost of veterinary medicine. Now, before all of you say, hey, my veterinarian's a bad guy, because no, I don't think that veterinarians are out to gouge people at all. But prices have gone up, and there are all sorts of reasons for it. Veterinarians in private practice, anyway, need to pay the rent or the mortgage. They need to pay their employees. The cost of equipment has gone up as well. In part, those tariffs have affected veterinary medicine, too. I mean, it's a combination of all sorts of different factors. So the reality is the veterinary costs have gone up percent-wise, higher even than the cost of inflation. And now combine that with we have more pets than ever before. We have more multi-pet homes than ever before. So it's not only the cost of a dog going to a veterinarian, it's sometimes the cost of two dogs and a cat. We have more blended families than ever before. So she had a dog and a cat. He has a dog, and now they're together with three pets, and that does cost more than one pet. So you've got all of these reasons and others. Also, the technology. I mean, what veterinarians can do today is incredible, but there's a cost to that as well. So with that as a backdrop, which you can add to if you'd like, Mikkel, I want to know what you're doing. You're saying you're standing up there with your husband Ryan and some others and saying, I am going to make a difference here.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I think that is very well said, Steve. It really, so Help a Pet is this initiative that we are starting that's all about helping to make veterinary care more affordable. And we're doing it in different ways. It includes some community funding, so helping to support pets and you know, those near and dear to your heart. Like, for instance, going through lymphoma with my pug, Bruce, it was really traumatic. It was so challenging, and I felt so alone. And what we're doing is helping to create a community where people can help support each other emotionally and also financially when appropriate, and helping with some of those veterinary bills, and also having something that is like insurance but different from insurance in a way that is more community-oriented. And so it's providing options for people that can make veterinary care more doable when we're facing it in a way that we don't have human-type insurance for our pets. There are insurance options, but sometimes there can be limits on what is available. So we're trying to make it where people can access care for their pets and they can treat some of those things that they really want to treat that can give their pet a great extension of life.
Now, I can be a fan of pet insurance, but there are a couple of realities here. Our pets are living longer than ever before. So when you get that puppy or kitten, the price is, yeah, fairly reasonable, right? But then that four-year-old dog or four-year-old cat, the price isn't as reasonable. And then when the dog or cat is 14, now it's really expensive to pay for. So as the cat or dog ages, or any pet, ages, the insurance cost increases substantially at times from year to year. That's one thing. And just like in some cases with our own insurance, the pre-existing conditions are an issue. And what good is that if you adopt an animal that had, for example, a cat with diabetes, and now the cat needs additional treatment and special food because of diabetes. Well, the insurance company might say, okay, we'll cover if the cat becomes hyperthyroid, but we're not paying for diabetes because the cat already had diabetes. So insurance sometimes I don't think is the solution, Mikkel.
Mm-hmm. I think you bring up a really great point there. And that's what we're also looking to combat is finding ways that we can make it more affordable and being able to help create this kind of community base of support where there is funding and there are options to be able to help your pet and you're not left stranded and alone. And in that situation where you do have these things that are really important to treat that you don't have the funds to cover. So we're really looking at some really great options that can provide support for people and for their pets.
The other statistic I've come across is that economic euthanasia is up. Mm-hmm. In other words, people who go to their own veterinarian saying, I just can't afford to do this anymore. Or in some cases, dropping the dog or cat or whatever pet it is off at an animal shelter, mm-hmm. Sometimes just literally dropping that pet off, it's heartbreaking because that animal is still a member of your family and you just can't afford anymore. In Chicago, where I am, I know that happens on a daily basis. So I want to hear more about what Help a Pet is all about and how you can help people to learn more about Help a Pet. We'll do that when we come back on WGN. Mikkel Becker is one of the kindest people on the planet, not only to pets, but to other people as well. Here's my goal, Mikkel. I want you to say something bad about somebody. I don't think you could do it. I don't think you could do it. No, you don't have to answer that, by the way. But I do have another question for you. Your pug's name is Bruce? Is that after Bruce Springsteen? Is that after... Where does that come from?
So I had two pugs, Bruce and Willie, and they're my late pugs, but those just near and dear to my heart. And now I have two pug mixes and a French bulldog.
Ah,
so,
okay.
A Stitch, Indiana Bones, and Otis.
I just love when you get pets because I like to hear what their names are. We're talking about affordability in veterinary medicine. You are a certified dog trainer, certified animal behavior consultant, co-founder of Fear Free. Fear Free has made such a difference around the world, actually, not only in the United States. And your goal with Help a Pet is to financially help people in America as well. You came up with the idea because I'm guessing that you realized and you've heard from many clients of yours as a dog trainer that people are just having financial issues in paying for their animals.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it keeps people from going to the vet. And like you said, even having that pet or being able to keep that pet. And that's why it's so near and dear to our heart. And we also don't want to keep it from people being able to adopt those animals that are so adoptable and that need that love in that home. But maybe they have a medical issue. And that's where we're looking at ways through Help a Pet to be able to help fund that pet for their entire life, to be able to give them that type of support to pay for that medical care. Maybe it is that cat with diabetes or that dog with thyroid issues, being able to have that type of treatment and ongoing medication that they feel supported throughout their entire life
and
whoever they go to live with.
One of the most frustrating parts in talking to veterinarians is now a 13-year-old dog with lymphoma, but you caught it early, it can be treated. And the veterinarian says that, but also says, okay, here's what the price is going to be. Or another dog example, a dog that tore its cruciate. And here's what that surgery cost is going to be. I mean, we can cure this with surgery, but there's a cost to surgery. Now, I suggest I'll compare cruciate surgery in a human. I don't know how much it would cost, but we're talking probably, what, $100,000, $80,000, something like that? It's obviously nowhere near that in veterinary medicine. I still argue that the cost of care in veterinary medicine is a bargain relative to human medicine. Having said that, if you can't afford it, you can't afford it, Mikhail.
Oh, my gosh, yes, you're so right. And it's like to just have that peace of mind to know that you have support behind you, that if something does happen, there's help. Because a lot of people, we're operating on, you know, you may have a few hundred dollars in your savings and that's it. And, you know, if you blow a tire, you're spending it on that and maybe something else comes up. It's like there's not a lot of money in the bank, literally, a lot of times. And some of the funding options that are available are pretty limited. And so that's where we really hope to be able to help people is with Help a Pet and having so many different funding options to help you get through that crisis. And basically having just this pool of community support that's going to be able to be there for them.
The other thing, and I'll let you explain what that is in a moment, but the other thing is there's credit that you could get, but then you have to pay back with interest, you know, or you can't get the credit because you're not going to be approved in the first place. So explain, I don't think it's up and running yet, but explain what Help a Pet how it will work. We have about 3 minutes left.
All right. So there's a lot of different assets of or aspects of Help a Pet, but one of them is going to be, you know, similar to like Christian ministries that do insurance. So there's some similarity with it there. So being able to have this type of community support, and so when there is a bigger need, that money can go there, and also being able to have as you're putting your money in, a lot of times people don't ever see that money later on, but actually being able to have that pool of money for what you've put in to be able to get some of that back out later if you have an issue with your pet. That's a big piece of what can occur. And also for some of those bigger bills and some of those things, being able to have other options for funding that they just currently don't have access to now. And so there are lots of different ways. So it's not just attacking it from one angle, but from many different angles. So there are so many options to be able to help your pet. I wish I would have had this back in the day when my dog Bruce, when we were treating him for lymphoma, because it was too expensive. We literally couldn't pay for it. And it was one of those things where it's like, is it worth it or not? And we'd already treated him for a thymoma, and that was about $6,000. Now we're facing this really, really big medical bill when it wasn't just thymoma, it was actually lymphoma the entire time. And so, you know, in that situation, like it was too much, and the ability to save him was just, it just was an awful dilemma. It's an awful dilemma that people are put in a lot of the time. And I face that myself, you know, as a single mom, like, and I think that it happens to all of us, no matter what situation we're in. And it should never have to be that way where you're trying to decide, you know, how do I do this and not go into serious debt, but then also save my pet, who's my family. Like literally Bruce was my family. And, you know, having a veterinarian as a father, I was able to better understand, you know, with the treatment as progressive as it was, that it probably wasn't going to add a lot of life to him. And so in that situation, it made it a little bit easier, but it still is one of those things where I look back and I'm like, gosh, what if? And that's where I really hope that Help a Pet will help people in terms of like, it's not, I just don't have the ability now. It's like, you know, looking at doing a payment plan, for instance. If I had a payment plan option, oh my gosh, I would have been so doable back then, but I didn't have that. And that's what Help a Pet can do, is offer a lot of different options to be able to help both immediately and then also long-term to make it doable to be able to give your pet the treatment that they need.
And as I said, you're not quite up and running yet, but I remember when Fear Free first began, I did the same kind of interview. You're not ready yet, but I know this is going to be important and make a difference for so many people. But people can still go somewhere and learn about Help a Pet, correct?
Absolutely. You can go to helpapet.com. And then also you can find me on my socials at Mikkel Becker. So MikkelBecker, Facebook, Instagram. And also you can visit fearfree.com.
All right. And if the website isn't quite up yet when this airs, wait a minute. It will be. Mikkel, you've done so much yourself for veterinary medicine and for our animals. Thank you so much. And it is always a pleasure to talk with you. Apparently, the biggest problem for our oceans and rivers and lakes and streams are plastics that are everywhere, these microplastics. And what can you do about it? So people do go into bodies of water happily and take the metal cans out and other large but what do you do about microplastics? Well, scientists have now developed a tiny robotic fish to help clean up our oceans. This robotic fish is capable of swimming through water and collecting microplastics. This is amazing. Now, researchers say the technology is still experimental, and future versions are going to monitor pollution levels and remove microplastics. I can't wait until this happens because the world will be a healthier place. We'll talk to you next week. Nothing fishy about that. Bright and early on WGN.